Now, it's Gabe time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's Gabe time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Week is flying by. It is Thursday, July 11, 2024. That is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. As always, that's Connor Dunning on X at CDunning929. Connor, what's the word?
What's up, man?
Where are you locked in the sports world right now? Because I think I'm Team USA locked in after last night.
The most I'd be locked in would be Grizzly Summer League and Team USA for sure.
Yep. Now, we don't know about Zach Edey and exactly what that's going to look like in Vegas or if he'll play at all, but we have a little bit of light shed on that, and it doesn't seem that great. Doesn't seem like we're going to be able to see him, but hey, worst things have happened in the world. Now, we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to open on Team USA last night. They played an exhibition against Canada, handled business, won by 14, and there's a lot of things that were working against them, and they were in exhibition mode, but they still handled business against a team that's supposed to be in their weight class. So I thought there were a lot of positives from last night, a couple negatives, but we'll talk about those along the way. But we have plenty else. Titans ended up signing Jamal Adams. I don't know how a lot of Titans fans feel about that, and if you don't know how to feel, I'll tell you how to feel once we get into the Blitz. As far as guests are concerned, Jeff Calkins will join at 5 o'clock from the Jeff Calkins Show on the Daily Memphian. He's a columnist there. Then at 6 o'clock to talk more about Team USA and Summer League and the NBA offseason, I'll bring on my guy from Lakers Nation and the front office show with Key Smith. That would be Trevor Lane. Trevor Lane will join at 6 o'clock before we hop into the Blitz, talk about everything under the sun. But I'm in Team USA mode. I really am. This team is very fun to watch, very star-studded. And I think they really have a chance, truly, Connor, to be the next team that has a name attached to them in Team USA lore. We had the Dream Team in 92, the Redeem Team in 08, and now I think that we look at 2024, I think people need to remember, LeBron James is playing again. Steph Curry has never played an international play. He's never played for Team USA in the Olympics. That's fun in itself. Joel Embiid moved over. And he's playing for Team USA. This is a ridiculous set of talent that they have. Now, they got the W last night after a really slow start. They came out in full exhibition mode offensively and were down 11-1 to Canada. They ultimately won 86-72, got a 14-point win. They used erratic subs where, you know, it's 10-minute quarters in international play. And they went at 5 minutes, they did full-on line changes, like first group,
platoon
second group.
Platoon swaps.
Yes. And again, I mentioned it, they were in full exhibition mode offensively. It felt like because of the platoon swaps, they never really had a chance for any group in particular to hit their stride on offense. The two groups they ran, first group was steady, in my opinion. Steph, LeBron, Joel Embiid, Devin Booker, Drew Holiday. Now, when KD gets back involved, I'd imagine he'd be part of that starting lineup. The second group, though, I thought was just strict energy and defense. They were the more fun group to watch last night, in my opinion. Jason Tatum had a good game. Tyrese Halliburton's really good for this team as an on-ball guy. Then you had Anthony Edwards, who was the leading scorer last night with 13. And then Bam Adebayo and Anthony Davis as a defensive duo is like, I can't say enough about it. It's ridiculous. And I think it helps them pretty tremendously. Once they start playing the tougher teams, you know, in international play, France and Canada, especially France, because they have Wimby and Rudy Gobert, I think those guys will be a tremendous help. Now, the positives last night, I think you need to play Anthony Edwards as much as possible. We know what he said before he got into this first exhibition. He said, I want everybody to, I'm the main guy. People need to play around me, and he showed that, man. He was their leading scorer with 13. I thought the defense that was played by both groups was pretty phenomenal. I did think LeBron and Steph running the break was pretty cool, too. Like, that was something that we'll remember for a while. The lob that they threw, I think it was in the third quarter, that was phenomenal. The big negative from last night, what the hell, like, Joel Embiid, He's got to figure it out, man, because the international game's a lot different. And in the third quarter, he fouled out. He had 4 turnovers and 5 points. And to me, this is something I'm going to be honest with you. I kind of expected going into international play because he's a foul hunter. When you look at him as a player, he gets to the free throw line in the NBA consistently because the whistle is going to be a lot tighter. When you get into international play, you get loose with it. They don't call those touch fouls. He's still trying to draw fouls. And he's putting himself in a really bad situation. He cannot consistently do that. I think his game, as opposed to all the 11 other players, is going to be hampered because of international rules. But the fact of the matter is, last night, they won by 14 with no Kevin Durant, who's the leading scorer all time for men's Olympic basketball. Kawhi backed out last second. You did full 5-man, 5-minute mark substitutions. And again, they beat a team that is supposed to be close to their level. So this brings me to my overall point on this team, and I've been sitting here thinking through why I think they have a chance to be a historical group, why I think they could be the third team in Team USA history to have a name alongside the Dream and Redeem. First and foremost, I think, honestly, it's talent. Pound for pound, I think this is the most talented team in USA history. And certainly, you know, the Derek White addition, little weird. I still think it's dumb not to add Jaylen Brown in that situation, and he thinks it's dumb. He can't stop talking about it. But as it was originally constructed, you'd have to make a case for those 12 guys if you had Kawhi Leonard involved. You'd have to make a case on who wasn't a Hall of Famer on this roster. The only other roster in Team USA history that was top to bottom, all 12 were Hall of Famers, is I think one of the most underrated rosters in history. That was 96. That was after the Dream Team. Probably the worst player on that team was Mitch Richmond. He's still a Hall of Famer. But you would have had to make the case who's not a Hall of Famer on this roster. And I think it's a really good mix, right? You have this young and the old. The old guys, they're stamped old superstars who still have game. LeBron James, out of camp, was voted the best player in training camp for Team USA at 40, going on 40 years old. And then you have the young superstars who have either stepped in already or are stepping into their prime. The Tyrese Halliburtons, Jason Tatums, Anthony Edwards, Devin Booker. You keep going down that list. It's just a really good mix of guys, and there's no real weak link. Like, think about the Dream Team. You had Larry Bird and Magic Johnson on their last hurrah. They couldn't provide you much of anything. You had Christian Laettner, who was added as a college guy because he was a big name at Duke. He didn't really provide anything. And then I know people remember the Redeem Team in 08 as like this unbelievable squad, and they were phenomenal, and they ran through everybody internationally. But Michael Redd, Tayshaun Prince, Carlos Boozer, like, I look at this team and you just don't have a lack of Hall of Fame talent and Hall of Fame players. With those two teams in particular, you could pick out the guys where it's like, yeah, they either didn't have it anymore as an old superstar, or they just never were that good in the NBA to get them into the Hall of Fame. But digging deeper, I finally grasp on what it was that I really like about this team, that I think it just puts it on a completely different level. And the word that I came to was versatility, Connor. You watch this team. I mentioned AD, Anthony Davis, and Bam Adebayo. That is an insane front court defensive duo that we've never seen. They can switch. They can go block shots at the rim. They can get out on the break. They can run. Jrue Holiday is still Jrue Holiday in the backcourt as far as a defensive presence. I mean, he in the first half last night against two of the best players in the world, you have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jamal Murray. He held them to 3-for-13 from shooting in the first half. 3-for-13 for those two guys in particular. And then I think what also makes them really versatile, every big has the ability to make things happen. With Joel Embiid, I know that he's struggling with the international rules, but he can score at all three levels, and he can do it from the three-point line, do it from mid-range, do it at the rim. He can block some shots on the other end. AD, same idea. He has one of the best face-up games in the world, too. You throw the ball at the short corner, the high post, one of the best face-up games you'll ever see. He's got guard skill when he puts the ball on the ground. And then Bam Adebayo, as much as people don't view him in this light of, oh, this is a great offensive player, have you ever seen him initiate offense? He can bring the ball up the floor. He's got guard handles at times, and he can initiate and find a way to get his teammates involved. I don't know if you have a lot of bigs in history that are able to do that. And I know it's a different game and it's hard to compare eras, but these guys, this group of bigs they have is different. It is completely different than what they've had in the past. And then the final thing here, it's the best three-point shooting in the world. Like, it's not even close. The only guy on this roster who you don't want taking three balls is probably Bam Adebayo. Anthony Davis probably a second there, but he can still put it up when he wants to. Joel Embiid can do it. LeBron, I mean, just go down the list. Everybody can put up a three. There's no other team that is close to being their peer putting up three balls. So I think this team has a big, big opportunity to become a named team right alongside the Dream and Redeem team. They can put themselves in U.S. Olympic lore. I love this roster, and I thought last night was a good lead-in to what we were going to see.
I think last night is encouraging if you're a Team USA fan, and I believe all of us are, in that we can all agree that they didn't play their best basketball, but they still were able to take care of Canada and win by double digits. And I think that those are good signs, and most notably for me, you know, it was a bit of a rock fight in the first half, but then the defense, though, from the first quarter on for Team USA was vicious. It was just all over the place. And, you know, it is interesting that the two guys in the game, Joel Embiid and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, two players who we can all admit get a lot of their points from the free throw line, both of them struggled mightily last night because they have to get used to these Olympic rules. And I did find that an interesting wrinkle storyline within. But no, I totally agree with you. This team has a chance to be historic. And I don't know if they have to have a blank team name, because I do think that they have been, one of the monikers that they have been given is the Avengers. And I think that that is a pretty apt term for this basketball team, especially when you have LeBron and Steph playing together for the first time in international play. And I will say, last night, I found myself, it's the first time I've ever really been able to root for Steph Curry, and it was a fun experience.
But
it was
also
a pretty fun experience.
Let's be honest, felt a little weird at first.
Of course it did. Of course it felt a little weird, but I found myself being like, man, when you're not terrified of Steph every single time he shoots, he's a pretty fun guy to root for because he can do things out there that nobody else can. And I do totally agree with you. Their three-point shooting ability is what, you know, separates them from the pack.
And they weren't that great last night.
No, they only hit 30% of them, but they took 23. But they, because they were also able to kind of get to all their spots on the floor when they wanted to. I am curious to see, though, if this platoon style is what continues, because I do not think it is sustainable. I do think they need to some sort of pecking order needs to come to fruition. I wouldn't hate the idea of sliding Anthony Edwards into the starting lineup, but at the same time, the idea of Anthony Edwards feasting on the benches of international teams is very, very interesting.
That allows him to do what he said he wanted to do, be the guy, and everybody else has to fit. I know he was doing it with a smirk, but go ahead and do that with the second group.
Right.
You can be that guy. You are the guy with that second group. But as far as the starting lineup is concerned, I don't think Anthony Edwards is going to be slid in. It depends on, you know, who they're playing and what Steve Kerr wants to deploy. But I think when you're talking about a starting point of the starting lineup, I think you have to talk about the vets. It's going to be LeBron, Steph, KD, and probably Joel Embiid as the big.
Right, Booker is kind of a placeholder at the moment.
And then what do you do with that fifth spot? In my opinion, you probably lean Drew Holiday to try to supplement all of that offense, all of that experience with a little bit of defense.
I would agree.
That's probably where you're going to go. Now, I know that Drew Holiday is not the sexiest name to be in that starting lineup, but it makes the most sense.
He's a winner.
He was ridiculous last night defensively. He has been on a absolute role since he got into the NBA playoffs to now. He cannot be messed with on that end of the floor. He just bothers everybody.
Bam and Anthony Davis, though, on a second unit playing against second unit international players, it's almost unfair to watch, because Bam being so good at the center position, it allows AD to play power forward where he truly wants to play, but he's able to roam, and that looks like four blocks and two steals.
Yes,
and then every single time they got near the rim, Anthony Davis is like, uh-uh.
Know what gets me to, if you watched it last night when they got some knockaways or they tried to get out on the break off of a defensive rebound, those two bigs running the floor,
they're right with them.
What are you going to do? What can you do about those two guys when they get out and start running? Because they're just as fast as all the guards in international play, generally speaking. And really, they can keep up with the guys on their own team.
What did you make of LeBron's play?
He was fine. I thought he was pretty good.
It was for me, it was fascinating to watch because he took a bit of a back seat and he played. I saw somebody tweet this out. I don't remember who it was, but I actually totally agreed with it. He was playing a bit of a Draymond role for Team USA last night. And there was part of me that was like, if he plays this way, this is the way that the Lakers should want LeBron to be playing now. This is how to maximize LeBron James's last few years, but they haven't built the roster around him.
They don't have the roster to even come close to doing that.
Because they're still like, LeBron, we need you to carry us to play. But as I was watching it last night, I was like, man, this is the way to maximize the last few years of LeBron James, is allow him to be somebody that's just setting up everything, and he doesn't have to give everything on the offensive end so he can still give you something on defense. Because I thought his defense last night was pleasantly surprised by it. I mean, he had three steals and he had a chase down block. He looked like classic LeBron in a few moments. I will say that lob play, although very cool because it was Steph to LeBron, it did make me a little sad that he couldn't get up like he used to. We are starting to see the beginnings of the end for LeBron James, so that made me a little bit sad. But I do want to go back to something real quick that you said about that 1996 team. I totally agree with you. This may be the most underrated team
in
Team USA Olympic history. I'm just going to read to you the big man rotation that this team had. It is the single greatest big man rotation we've probably ever seen.
And before you get into it, I want people to understand, like, this is the only Olympic roster in men's USA basketball. Now, they were missing Michael Jordan at the time, and that was the big, kerfuffle. That was the big issue with this roster, when we try to hold it up historically. But they had 12 players. All 12 were Hall of Famers.
Yes.
Every single last one of the people on the 96 team were Hall of Famers.
Well, and Penny, who should be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, yeah.
Who should be in the Hall of Fame. But Penny was a part of that team, which automatically makes it one of our favorites. But here is just the power forward and center rotation that this team had. And remember, this is 1996, so the three-point line was not really the dominant force of basketball. It was the bread and butter was, we're getting to the paint, we're going to put it in the rim. Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, Hakeem Olajuwon, Shaquille O'Neal, and David Robinson.
Yeah.
Good luck, everybody.
Yeah, no, like that,
good luck.
That, like, when you go back, and I was just doing
that's
this last
crazy.
Night for research purposes, just looking at the history of who's been on the team, the whole thing, who's won gold medals, that team struck me. And I know it was after the Dream Team when they finally allowed the NBA players to play, so it gets sort of lost in translation that way. But that team was insane. That team was probably right there with the Dream Team,
because
if we're being honest.
You also had 23-year-old Grant Hill, who was unbelievable. You had 25-year-old Penny Hardaway. You had the version of Shaq where he could still run the floor like a deer, but he was still dominant on the inside.
Yep.
And then you had the veterans Scottie Pippen, John Stockton there. You had Karl Malone
John
there.
Stockton barely
Charles
played. John
Barkley.
Stockton, I think, got hurt in those Olympics.
That's what I mean. It's like the players that weren't playing for this team are unreal, but the ones that were getting major playing time, it's just when you go back and look at it, you're like, oh my God, how that big man rotation, though, is just, it's got to be the single greatest big man rotation in NBA history. It's got to be.
Yeah, I'm with you. Now, I also, another thing that jumps out about this team this year, I think there's no shortage of reason behind them. Like, they have a lot of vigor to what they want to get done this year. This is the last hurrah for a few of these guys. Like LeBron James, last hurrah. Kevin Durant, probably his last hurrah, last Olympic run. Steph Curry, first and last Olympic run, but also being his first, you know that he wants to prove something. Joel Embiid, first time playing with Team USA, he wants to prove something. Then you have all these guys who want to go get another gold, and Devin Booker, Drew Holiday, Jason Tatum, guys like that. Then you have the young guys that have never really done this before. Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton, and then, well, Derek White's not young, but this is his first chance to go do it. Like, you have a lot of reason to go get it done, go beat teams by a whole lot of points. And when I look at international play, there were two teams that I was worried about, quite frankly, and one of them was Canada. One of them was Canada. And they disposed of them by 14 without Kevin Durant and doing all those erratic substitutions. The other one that I would really point to is France, where you have just the Twin Towers there. Like, you have guys there on the back line that are unbelievable. Victor Wembanyama and Rudy Gobert. That's going to be tough to contend with, but I think Joel Embiid bringing him in, being able to put him on Team USA, I think that helps with the size matchup, the size disparity against France. But then the guard play is going to absolutely be running the day if they ever get into that matchup. But those were the two teams I'm worried about. They disposed of one really easily last night.
I think that one thing that will separate Team USA from the others will be that second unit specifically, though. The fact that you can bring in a second unit and really not lose a step on the offensive end or the defensive end, you could even argue that they might get better on the defensive end with that second unit, is what is going to be so valuable. Because, you know, the first 5-10 minutes of this game in the first quarter, it was pretty close, and you were like, uh-oh, Steph Curry's the only one shooting. Is there chemistry issues with this team? They're not passing the ball as well. And then that second unit came in, and it felt like, you know, they just kind of broke the levee and all of the water started flowing out, and that they kind of got this team rolling. And I do expect that to maybe be a trend that we see, where the first unit, you're going to have to, I think with Kevin Durant in there, it will certainly look a little bit better. But I do wonder if that second unit will be the one that gets things rolling and kind of builds that lead every single game, just because there's not another an international team in the tournament, in the Olympics, that can keep up with that second unit. It's just the talent level that Team USA has is so far and above of any other country that is where I think the separation is truly going to come. Like when Anthony Davis, Anthony Edwards are coming off your bench, good luck, everybody. Yeah, and that's why 100%. No game should be close. We talked about it yesterday. We do think that there might be a few moments against France, maybe Canada and Spain, in the Olympics where it might be tight. But at the end of the day, they should be winning by double digits every single game, because this is one of the best teams Team USA has ever put together. And to your point, they are playing with a purpose. Most of the guys understand, this is the last time I have to represent the country. I don't want to go out a loser. I need to go out with the gold. And it feels like after the FIBA letdown of last year, there's a point to be proven, I think, with this team.
Yeah. Now, I want to revisit something about this team that we talked about yesterday, because I thought Grant Hill, who's the managing director of USA Basketball, he gave some interesting explanations about the Kawhi to Derek White switch and why Jaylen Brown didn't get picked. But his explanation on Kawhi withdrawing, I found it kind of interesting. It wasn't Kawhi that made this decision. This was Grant Hill and USA Basketball watching him play in camp, and this is the quote Grant Hill gave. Quote, We just felt that we had to pivot and not to get into the particulars. In terms of what went into the decision, we just felt that it was in our best interest, but also the Clippers and Kawhi's best interest, to move in a different direction. How bad was he in camp? Was he limping around in camp?
If you're a Clippers fan, that quote scares the hell out of me. Hell out of you.
Because he must have looked awful.
He must have looked bad. Well, because there are Clippers people there, like Ty Lue was there. So you know when he was watching it, he was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. We have to shut him down. There's no way he can play for Team USA. He has got to get healthy. And that's why you and I were not happy with Kawhi when he announced that he was going to be playing for Team USA, because we were like, how can you play for Team USA when you sat out the playoffs, you weren't there for your own team? Every single year with you, there is a health issue, and you're going to play for Team USA, and you're not going to use the summer to get that knee healthy? It's really disappointing, because I think that we can all agree, when Kawhi was healthy and he was playing, he was arguably the best player in the world in moments. Like that Toronto version of Kawhi Leonard was unbelievable to watch. And it is sad that we have not been able to see that version of Kawhi Leonard since. But at some point, he's got to be honest with himself. And he could, like, just the fact that he went to this thing is like, come on, man. It sounds like he shouldn't have even been there in the first place.
To get pulled out by the director.
Bad.
That's not good. That's tough news. And then he did shed a little more light on Derek White, who he picked as an alternative over seemingly Jaylen Brown, Derek White's teammate with the Boston Celtics. And the more more time I've had to think about this decision, to see what Grant Hill had to say, the more I think this was kind of a rude decision on behalf of USA Basketball to exclude Jaylen Brown. He basically went up there and talked strictly about fit. And the only thing I have to say about that, and listen, there's some people that may disagree with this, you're playing with 11 other Hall of Famers. I think it's very disingenuous to talk about fit when you talk about Jaylen Brown. And when he talked about fit, you know what he said about Derek White? Oh, well, he can score at the three-point line, really good from there, and he's a really good defender. Everything that you left behind with Kawhi, Jaylen Brown at this point of his career, because of the health issues of Kawhi Leonard, Jaylen Brown probably does all of those things better. So if you wanted to pivot completely and move away from a player like Kawhi, sure, Derek White may be the guy you go for, just a spot-up three-point shooter, play a lot of defense. But if you were going for the next closest thing to Kawhi Leonard, that, to me, seems to be Jaylen Brown at this current moment. I just thought to say, oh, we went strictly based on fit after moving on from Kawhi, I thought that was just, with 11 other Hall of Famers on this roster, I thought that that was very disingenuous of Grant Hill to put out there.
You know, honestly, I think it should have been Vince Williams Jr. anyway.
A fit. We're talking about fit. You want a defender? There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Vince Williams Jr. You want to talk about the closest thing to Kawhi? That's Vince Williams Jr., baby. Go back and look at it.
I just, to me, Connor, the more time I've had to sit on this.
Well, they're dancing around what actually happened. There's a feud between Jaylen Brown and Phil Knight and Nike. That's why he's not on the team.
That's frustrating.
It's that simple.
That's BS. That's terrible politics.
I tend to agree. I also think, though, the Derek White fit is excellent for this team.
It's fine. This is not me hating on Derek White.
Right.
This is me sticking up for Jaylen Brown.
Right.
It should not be strictly about Nike and Phil Knight and what he wants. You're trying to put together the best team. And I thought Jaylen Brown could have been part of that.
I agree.
And then I think it's also a little disingenuous with 11 other Hall of Famers to say, oh, well, he would have pouted. And I guess that he is kind of proving their point right now. But I think he's got a genuine point behind the scenes right now. He's going after Nike. He's frustrated with how they're treating him. But the way he has responded does sort of prove a point of some people saying that he would pout if he didn't get playing time. But again, 11 other Hall of Famers. How much is that pouting really going to affect the locker room for a couple of weeks?
And, you know, I would push back against that point a little bit because I don't think he is pouting. I to be honest, I don't think he would pout about playing time. I think he just wants to represent his country.
Yes, and I think he's very frustrated with the way this played out because he know that the politics are politicking behind the scenes
He has been a bit unfairly treated in the way that they are speaking about him and the fit of Derek White. It, to your point, it's like, well, you just kind of described Jaylen Brown and how you talked about Derek White, and I don't think any of us have to pretend that Derek White is better
than Jaylen
Brown.
And can we be honest, is Kawhi Leonard, the closest thing to Kawhi Leonard of the new age of NBA basketball players, is it not Jaylen Brown? Pretty damn close.
I don't
fill
think
it
about
up,
it.
Decent
he's
in the mid-range,
in the
good two-way
yeah.
player, all defense type guy. Like I
he's certainly up there.
Go find another guy that sort of emulates a lot of what Kawhi Leonard does.
Right.
I think that Jaylen Brown's the perfect replacement if you're trying to find Kawhi Leonard as a player to replace Kawhi Leonard. And that's what I thought you would do. But I just think this whole process and the words that have been used by Team USA, it just seems very disingenuous to me. And I think there's other things obviously at play here with Phil Knight and Nike and Jaylen Brown not having a good relationship.
It's unfortunate, but we've seen it many times in the past. I mean, it happened with, you know, Isaiah Thomas is the most the most famous example of it.
I met the criteria,
but I was not selected. Guess what, Jaylen Brown, it's your turn. You could even make an argument that things like that have happened to Trae Young. Like it is, I do understand people who say Trae Young should be on this Team USA team. I am personally not a fan of Trae Young's game, but I recognize that his talent, he would do well on this team. I think that they would be fine if you like switched Halliburton with Young. I don't think that they would really lose that much of a step, even though I am of the opinion that you do kind of need these glue guys. And Tyrese Halliburton and Derek White can be your two glue guys. They have a role. Derek White is there to play defense. And
Trae Young
and
would
really
be,
it.
Like, can we be honest about Trae Young? But he'd be a massive hole on the defensive end. And what did
sure.
they win that game with last night?
Yeah.
Defense?
Well, Tyrese Halliburton kind of sucks on defense, too, though. But
he's substantially better than Trae Young.
I'm not that worried about defense with Team USA. Like, when you have Hall of Fame defenders
sure.
around him, you know, you can figure it out.
Now you're saying I'm being disingenuous.
Well, because, like, Steph. Like, is Steph a defensive stopper?
No.
I think not.
But that's why I'm talking about Drew Holiday supplementing
right.
the opening group, the starting
right.
group. See?
Exactly.
See, I'm
exactly.
always coming back to defense.
Yeah. Real quick, though, before we wrap up the opening segment, what did you make of Team Canada?
I didn't make much of them. I thought SGA, he's got a lot of work to do in the international game, like Joel
Stop
Embiid.
Foul hunting, man.
Jamal Murray, when he had Drew Holiday and some of these perimeter defenders in his face, he was just kind of worthless out there at times. Kelly Olynyk, actually, played relatively well.
He always does well in international play.
But to be honest with you, after watching that game last night and just seeing who they ran out there consistently, I'm just not. They're not that scary to Team USA.
Honestly, watching it, you know what one of my thoughts was? And I am extremely biased here, I will admit this. They could use Zach Edey.
They probably could.
Because Dwight Powell? You tell me that Zach Edey wouldn't be better than Dwight Powell?
Dwight Powell and Trey Lyles and the guys like that, like, no. I don't know about
that. Here's the thing, too, though. I do think we need
I think Zach Edey would be a definite help at the rim for them.
We also need to be fair to Team Canada. Their opening game was against the U.S., yes. which is like you're playing the Avengers. You're playing the Monstars of the Olympics. So they will probably beat the hell out of some lesser teams.
Can we be honest, though? That meant something to them last night.
Oh, yeah.
100%. And they were
good God.
Their rotations and the way they were subbing, it showed me.
Oh, they were trying.
They were trying very hard. And then Dylan Brooks after the game, did you see him? Devin Booker's trying to do an interview, and Dylan Brooks walks right through.
What a lunatic.
He's a lunatic.
I still kind of love him, though.
I tend to lean to liking that. I like the edge that he brings. But some of it's just, it's a little bit played out. And to me, he just tries to play a character at all times.
We need a good villain.
Sometimes I don't know if it's genuine, though, Connor, in this day and age.
There was certainly some gamesmanship.
It's just like he's playing the character that they expect him to play.
Well, and that's
why. But I will say this, too, about Team Canada. He's way too important for their team for me to really buy into what they can do in the Olympics.
Sure. He was good last night, though. He wasn't bad last night. I'll give him credit there. I will say, I do think that him trying to play up this villain thing, it takes away the effects of it a little bit. Because, for instance, when he had that bump moment with LeBron, he was laughing. Like, LeBron was laughing at it. And it's when you once you turn into a caricature of yourself, it takes away the seriousness of it. It's not as... You can't intimidate people when they're looking at you as a character.
And that's what he is, man. Walking it was funny to see that clip, though, where he's walking directly through.
He's just like, what the hell are you doing?
Walking right through Devin Booker's post-game interview. Yeah. And then the USA won last night. Did you see what they played after the game?
I did.
They played Not Like Us by Kendrick Lamar. We know Drake's from Canada.
Argentina also did that to Canada.
Really?
Yeah.
Makes sense. It makes it fits.
And soccer.
Yeah.
Football.
Drake's having a tough go of it here this summer.
Tough go. He just needs to go.
Not Like Us by Kendrick is still number one on all the Billboard
and then
lists.
Kendrick, the Juneteenth pop-up show, and then July 4th releasing the music videos. It's like, good God, he's dead. He's dead, Kendrick.
He keeps kicking the dead body, too. Keeps poking it. Wake up. Wake up, Drake.
Man. Yeah, no, it's so Argentina
Fight
did
back.
It, though. Argentina did it because Drake put like $500,000 on Canada to beat Argentina. So that's why their social media post after the game, they put up a picture of all the guys together and said, not like us.
Yeah.
Just tremendous work
Beautiful.
From Argentina.
Beautiful stuff. Now let's go ahead and grab our first break of the day. And when we come back, we have what I would like to call a confirmation of what we already know about Luke Kennard and his potential to get re-signed by the Grizzlies. We'll talk about that next. 92.9 FM ESPN. So just got done talking about Team USA and their exhibition against Canada that they won by 14 last night. Get this. It's coming from Andrew Marchand. Who is from The Athletic covering sports media. I don't know if this is a tale of where FS1 is or Fox Sports in general as a media conglomerate, but apparently last night's exhibition against Canada, they drew 1.162 million viewers. That's the most watched basketball game in FS1 history. It's kind of gnarly. Only 1.1 million, and that's the highest-ranked basketball game in the history of Fox Sports? That's kind of gnarly. But hey, regardless, we need to move on to bigger and better things. We have to talk about the Grizzlies, Memphis Grizzlies. We got a little bit of confirmation of what we seem to already know about where the Grizzlies are this offseason. Of course, we know they haven't added anything, really, in free agency. They got three new rooks. They have Zach Edey. We'll see what happens with him coming in Salt Lake. I'll give you some updates on that in just a moment. But Evan Sidery from Forbes covering the NBA basically confirmed that the Grizzlies are hopeful to re-sign Luke Kennard. This is what he had to say. Grizzlies are hopeful to re-sign Luke Kennard on a more team-friendly salary after declining his $14.8 million team option. Kennard, one of the best shooters available, remains in talks with Memphis. The other part of this tweet that just shook me, he's played 66 games with the Memphis Grizzlies. Do you know what his shooting percentage is from three?
Oh, I do. Yes.
In those games? 47.5.
pretty good.
But like where we're at right now with Luke Kennard, it really feels like this thing is about 99% of the way done. And it feels like it's going to end up with him back with the Grizzlies in a Grizzlies uniform. Because for the most part, you haven't heard him attached anywhere else. If he was going to sign anywhere else, he likely would have done that already because he is one of the best shooters on the open market. And what do all teams need, seemingly? Shooting and potentially and mostly off the bench. It just feels like they're getting this thing done. A couple more dominoes have to fall. And then he'll ultimately be re-signed on a relatively team-friendly deal.
That's the hope. That's the hope. And he's also, you know, been leaving breadcrumbs on his own social media. He's
his
liking,
baby with the Grizz ball.
Right. He's liking starting lineups that have, you know, the Grizzlies on ESPN, and he's posting pictures of his new child with the Grizzlies basketball. So it seems like everything is moving in the right direction for Luke Kennard to once again be a Memphis Grizzly. And I think that you and I are both of the opinion that they are better with Luke Kennard, so I would like to see it. I would like to for it to get done here pretty soon so we can stop worrying about it. But I am of the opinion that Luke Kennard, without a doubt, makes this team better, and you have value with him in the playoffs specifically because you need that 3-point shooting. If you have Desmond Bane and Luke Kennard on the floor at the same time, that floor spacing is going to be fantastic. I would love to see it. I'm not too worried about his defensive ability when he has guys around him like Vince and Jaren and Marcus Smart. They're going to take up the defensive, you know, and I think that Desmond Bane is a better defender than he gets credit for.
And Luke is a guy who tries on the defensive end.
At least
he doesn't succeed all the time.
That's true.
Right. Like, for him, I just feel like the shooting is just so necessary for this team.
Because the numbers are
there. They have been consistently in the bottom half of the league. Even when they were winning 50 games second in the West, they were bottom half of the league in 3-point shooting, in percentage and makes. That type of thing. You need to add more of that. And let's also remember, 2 years ago, when they were playing the Los Angeles Lakers and they didn't have the bigs, they didn't have Steven Adams in the lineup, Luke Kennard was sort of the X factor. Obviously, he got hurt in that series, and he didn't get to play when they ultimately got closed out, but he was the X factor with no Steven Adams in that lineup. He stretched the floor a whole lot more. You were able to get points from other spots on the floor, namely the 3-point line, especially there on the wing. I just think Luke Kennard going forward, the addition of him to this bench, definitely puts the Grizzlies in a different tier altogether. It puts them in a different tier altogether in the Western Conference. And our good friend Keith Smith, who works, we'll talk with his partner Trevor Lane a little bit later in the show around 6 o'clock. But on the front office show, when he was talking about Western Conference teams that he thinks are going to be top half and going to surprise some people going into next year, he put the Grizzlies at the very top of that list. Because when you just look at their starting lineup, all healthy, Ja, Jaren, Bane, Zach Edey, you throw in Marcus Smart or Vince Williams Jr., and then you have probably 9 deep when you get to Gigi and Vince and Luke Kennard and Santi. Like, there are a lot of different options. They have a lot of optionality when you bring Luke Kennard back into the fold.
I think there are two teams in the West that you can say will probably be ahead of the Memphis Grizzlies definitively. After that, I think the Grizzlies could end up 3, 4, or 5.
Well,
I expect them to kind of be in that range.
What do you mean? Which teams are we talking about definitively?
I think the Thunder and the Timberwolves will be better during the regular season.
I would argue Nuggets are still going to be around. Although they've gotten worse, and
the
Contavious Caldwell-Pope thing, that was a blunder.
Yeah.
So
I'm curious to see what they look like. That Jamal Murray injury, too, is different. He's been different since he came back from that injury.
And then the Dallas Mavericks, they've made themselves better, in my opinion, this offseason.
That's why I think the Grizzlies land somewhere between 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah. And I think they could even surprise. I mean, let's not act like we thought they were going to be second in the West 2 years running. Right? Like, they have some upward trajectory. I think that, you know, seeing Zach Edey paired with John, that pick and roll, is going to provide some different looks. I think other teams are going to have to adjust with Zach Edey's 7'4", 300-pound body in there. It's going to be a different look they throw at teams, and I wonder if that's going to make up some ground where we think that they have potentially lost over the past couple of years.
Maybe so.
I'm curious how it all works out, but I think that Luke Kennard is on his way to signing with the Grizzlies. It's just a matter of when at this point, right? I don't think there's a question as to where he's going to sign elsewhere. It's Grizzlies or bust for the most part.
As of this moment, we don't have a reason to think otherwise.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Now, Grizzlies Summer League rolled along a little bit last night. We'll talk about the game in a second, but there is an update to their roster going into Vegas. And I wonder what this means, Connor. I wonder what this means. They have added guard Lucas Williamson and forward Drew Pember. They can only carry 15 going to Vegas. What does that mean for this roster? Who's on, who's off? I wonder if we're looking at a situation where Jake LaRavia and Zach Edey get shut down for the rest of Summer League. It seems like that's the direction we're headed because you've seen what you needed to see. Maybe we could debate about Jake LaRavia, but I think most people are of the opinion Zach Edey, 14 points, 15 boards, 4 blocks, tried to limit his fouls for the most part, even though he had 6. But remember, one was a technical and one was that really ticky-tack foul at the end when the refs were trying to get out of the Jazz's stadium. They just wanted to get the hell out of that arena at that point. I think that they have seen most of what they want to see from Zach Edey in his translation into a Grizzlies uniform.
Yeah, and I do wonder if that ankle scare just told the front office, okay, we don't need to play with fire here, because selfishly we would like to see Zach Edey play more, just because, one, it would be...
And I'm sure, and this was part of the Daily Memphian story that was written yesterday. He wants to play.
Sure.
He wants to be out there and continue to play.
Yeah, Drew's story was really good. Drew's story was great that he put out, so I highly recommend everybody go and read that if you want some more information about the situation. But it does sound like that he wants to play, but I do think that the front office, given what happened last year, is going to be cautious with health, and to be honest, I can't fault them for that. It's taking away our entertainment factor during the summer, because Zach Edey is great for content, and watching him play, I did feel like I was ascending into heaven, seeing him set those bone breaking screens, and the people that he was screening were also ascending into heaven with me. Like, they were right next to me as we were heading up there. But I can't be mad at them for being cautious with it and saying, listen, he took a couple hard falls, he turned an ankle, we need to make sure that this team is fully healthy when the season starts next year, so I'm okay with it.
And what strikes me about this team and the way this has gone the last couple of years, we know they only won 27 games last year after winning 50 the year before. We always talked about the wing, the extra wing, and that's why they took a shot on Jake LaRavia, David Roddy, and Zaire Williams. We always thought the wing, oh, that's the get-over-top move. I think over the years we took for granted the Steven Adams part of this whole thing. You need to have that big in there to even come close to what you did those 2 years, 3 years ago and 2 years ago.
Right.
That big is the given part of this thing. Now the big seems to be sort of the get-over-top move for the Grizzlies. That's why they take Zach Edey at number 9. But the way we have warped our brain to sort of look at this whole thing, the big picture of the Grizzlies and what they need to be successful, it's kind of wild, because you take Steven Adams for granted and you see what it looks like when he's out of there, the back half of 2 years ago and then last year the entire year. Well, and that's where the Zach Edey thing comes in, shutting him down. You don't want to take any chances with him getting hurt before the season, because that could be a death blow before the season even starts if he does get injured.
Right. Well, because at the very least, I think that having a guy like Steven Adams, like Jonas, or like Zach Edey, it unlocks a version of Jaren, too, that I think is very special, especially on the defensive end of the basketball. And that's where I am really – I know that we're all hyped for the Zach Edey, Ja Morant pick and roll, some sprinting at the defenders and them having to make a choice between life and death, whether or not they want to jump or not with Ja Morant. But I am really, really excited to see Jaren be able to kind of get back into the role that he was playing when he won Defensive Player of the Year. He is going to be roaming, and he is going to be a threat. And if Zach Edey can protect the rim like he did in the first Summer League game, in any way, if he can just get, just have 2 blocks a game, not 4. I'm not asking for 4 every single game. Give me 1 or 2 blocks a game. It is going to be damn near impossible to score on the Grizzlies in the paint. And that is something that I am very excited to see next year. And that's why, hey, if this is your way that you can guarantee that Zach Edey is healthy day one, I'm all for it. If we get to see him again, I'll be thrilled if we get to see Zach Edey play again, but I'm not going to be upset with the front office if they don't. Real quick, though, I do need to give somebody credit that I have been I have been hesitant on giving this guy credit since he has become a Memphis Grizzly, a two-way
guy. I think
guy.
I know where you're going with this.
Trey Jemison.
Yeah.
Trey Jemison. I got to eat a little bit of crow, I think, on Trey Jemison. I incorrectly said last week, because I forgot that we had more than one. I forgot that we had an extra two-way spot. Trey Jemison, I said that we might have to say bye to him. So I was incorrect there with the two-way thing. So I do want to correct the record there. Trey Jemison, I was highly impressed with his play last night. Highly impressed. And I have been throughout the summer league. He has improved as a basketball player. He has. He is catching the ball more. He has had more of a post present. Defensively, he has been better. He is crashing the boards. If he is your fifth big on a two-way, I am perfectly fine with it.
Okay, that's the next question, though, for me. Is, are you comfortable with him being the guy with a games restriction that when Zach Edey sits out, this is the guy that you may have to rely upon?
To begin the season, yes.
Okay. I still am a little on that point. I'm still a little bit out on that.
Well, because here's the reality of the situation that they are in right now. If they can't get rid of Z, it's going to have to be. This is what it's going to have to be. Yeah. It's either Luke Kennard or a big. I'd rather have Luke right now.
Well, theoretically, let's just talk through this. You could waive Z and then defer some of that money
you
down.
You could. I don't think
you
they
could
will.
Extend it. I mean, I'm not saying they will. I'm saying if you feel like you're in this window where you want to go compete, you feel like you have a championship team, as long as you go add another big to, you know, fill in the blanks when Zach Edey's not around or some of these bigs get hurt, I think you could go add a free agent. You could go add that free agent. You could be aggressive. You could get rid of Zaire's contract, go ahead and waive him, and then bring in another guy. I don't see a problem with that.
Part of the reason I have this take at this moment, though, is that the free agent market in the big man category has dried up significantly. It is you
but
are
there
now
are
looking
there
at
still some guys.
Metu, Muscala, like Biombo, Tristan Thompson, maybe a Gorgui Dieng reunion.
But I think a lot of those guys still could provide a little bit more than Trey Jemison in the current moment.
Maybe.
But how much more is worth getting rid of Z and getting rid of that money,
My point being, if right now the decision comes down to we can either have a fifth pick that we can add in free agency
or Trey.
It's Luke Kennard. And Trey. It's Luke Kennard and Trey, or it's a free agent. And I'm taking Luke Kennard and Trey for the time being. And if you are still having big man issues with that fifth big, you know, I am a little disappointed that they weren't able to solve that problem, but I also understand the roster crunch that they're under right now. You still have the deadline. You still have trades that you can make during the regular season to maybe find that fifth big. At the end of the day, though, once again, we've discussed it many a time, our brains have been warped from last season to really... The fifth big may not even necessarily matter for the Memphis Grizzlies. At the end of the day, you don't want it to. If the fifth big, you are, to be quite honest, you are praying that this season
if we're being completely honest, last year has warped our brain to care about all 15 roster spots and all the two-way.
I would bet money that the Grizzlies fan base and media, I'm not just putting it on the fan base, probably cares about 1 through 15 more than any other team in the NBA. It's got to be, because
we saw it because of
last year. It was unbelievable what we all had to go through last year. We quite literally saw the most players who have ever played for a basketball
team. The
single most injured team of all time was the Memphis Grizzlies. And that's why, I will say, I have seen some people try to make the comparison between the Tigers and the Grizzlies. There is no comparison. The Tigers lost a guy. They lost a guy.
Are you talking about like the lack of success, issues?
Trying to tie it to injuries. Yeah. It's like the Tigers lost Caleb Mills.
I've seen
and I understand
some of
that was a big injury. But the Grizzlies played 30-plus guys played for the Grizzlies. It's not the same conversation.
Those people that do that, can we pull out the Jason Smith fool? Fools.
You a fool.
Absolute fools, man.
We need to get that as a drop.
Those guys are fools. If you're saying, well, Taylor Jenkins, he doesn't take any criticism for all the injuries he had and how bad they were, but Penny, he's taking so much criticism. But look, Caleb Mills was out, Jordan Brown didn't work out. It's not the same thing
not
at all.
Not the same thing
the
at
most
all, y'all.
Historically, the most injured team of all time last year. There's some insulation for anybody who was a part of that staff last year. And they ended up making staff changes anyway.
Right.
I mean, so it is what it is.
I think Gigi had a better game.
Yeah, but those people that you're talking about, I don't take them seriously.
Fair
I'm
enough.
Just going to be completely
fair enough.
Yeah, Gigi did have a better game. He shot better. I still didn't like the turnovers, and he didn't really get his teammates involved as much as I want to see him.
He had two assists.
Two.
It was better.
2 to 6 turnovers.
He had 2 assists.
That's not exactly Tyus Jones' assist to turnover ratio.
But he played much more within himself. You know, like he took 7 threes, hit 3 of them, 7 for 14, 50% from the field. He played within himself much more than he did the first few games.
My man Pip was just chucking.
Pip is really good.
He was chucking.
Pip is so good.
He was chucking last night because he knew he had the opportunity.
I love Pippen.
One thing about him, he's got a little, as a facilitator and an offensive initiator, he's got that, a little bit of the Tyus Jones. He keeps those turnovers way down.
He absolutely has Tyus
in him. I think he's really good as an on-ball defender.
I say something that may be blasphemous in the city?
Yes, it might sound blasphemous.
I know Tyus is beloved here, and he should be. I love me some Tyus Jones. Pippen's a better defender.
I don't know. Going into the future, I wonder what their plan is with him.
I think the plan is...
Can't keep him on a two-way forever.
I think the plan is with Pippen. To me, it appears, we're trying to get another year out of Rose. Let him finish out his contract. Pippen will play the games that Rose can't.
Then convert
him. And at the end of the day, if it becomes apparent that Rose isn't going to be able to get through the season, I do think that maybe you see a situation in which there's a discussion, hey, Rose, thank you. It means a lot that you're a Memphis Grizzly, but for the team, we need to convert Pippen and allow him to be a full-time player.
And this is the other part about why our mind is warped. We've seen a lot of guys that have the ability to step in roles and have already stepped into roles from two-way contracts. That's why our mind is warped.
Yeah, also that.
Like Vince Williams Jr., G.G. Jackson, we expect to be part of the rotation. Scottie Pippen Jr., another diamond you found just sort of running, just luckily falling into
Who found these diamonds?
That would be Zach Klein.
The front office?
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay. I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we're going to talk everything under the sun, probably a little bit of Team USA as well with my guy Jeff Calkins. He's next.
Be able to get through the season. I do think that maybe you see a situation in which there's a discussion, hey, Rose, thank you. It means a lot that you're a Memphis Grizzly, but for the team, we need to convert Pippen and allow him to be a full-time player.
And this is the other part about why our mind is warped. We've seen a lot of guys that have the ability to step in roles and have already stepped into roles from two-way contracts. That's why our mind is warped.
Yeah, also that.
Like Vince Williams Jr., G.G. Jackson, we expect to be part of the rotation. Scottie Pippen Jr., another diamond you found just sort of running, just luckily falling into
Who found these diamonds?
That would be Zach Klein.
The front office?
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay. I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we're going to talk everything under the sun, probably a little bit of Team USA as well with my guy Jeff Calkins. He's next.